Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast. This is Emily,
Henley,
and Sammy. And you're listening to Too Scary, Didn't Watch.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Too Scary, Didn't Watch, the horror movie recap podcast for those too scared to watch for themselves. I'm Emily, and I am too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Henley, and I'm also too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Sammy, and I love watching scary movies, and so I watch them so that you don't have to. Most of the time, that's what happens.
Except this week.
Sometimes that's not what
Sometimes
happens.
Sometimes it's not, as you will soon find out. But before we get into that, did anything scary happen to us this week?
Well, speaking of watching scary movies, tomorrow is Halloween.
Ooh, baby.
Scariest of holidays. And in anticipation of Halloween, I've been wanting to get a little more in the spooky spirit, wanting to watch some scary-ish things.
Ish-ish is the key.
Ish-ish-ish. What I love, I wish there were more movies that are like for adults, but are Halloween moody but not scary. We've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. Like I don't want it to be a kid's movie. I want it to be an adult's movie, but I want it to be, you know, Halloween vibey. Mm-hmm. And I have found a couple of those. And
what are
they? I'll tell you. One is Sleepy Hollow, which I had never seen. Isn't that crazy?
Mm-hmm. I saw that like when I was too young.
It's great. It's super fun. I mean, I know it's like, oh, Johnny Depp, but you know, whatever. I personally was able to move past it. And if you're not, I also understand that.
Sure.
But
sure.
Perfect Halloween ambiance movie. Perfect spooky, but like not scary and fun.
I feel like that was also when Johnny Depp was still somewhat like interesting as an actor. He really went off the rails in the last 10 years.
Yes.
Once he became Jack Sparrow.
In several ways,
done.
He went off the rails. That the Mad Hatter Jack Sparrow era is, yeah. But he was great in it. And it's a very fun Halloween ambience movie. So even though this episode comes out after Halloween, if you're still in the mood, I'd recommend that. I'd also recommend, which, oh my God, I haven't even gotten a thing that I wanted to talk about this week, and I have to get to it because we have to get to it. But like this I could talk about for 1,000 years, which is I finally saw Interview with the Vampire, which how did it take me this long? What was I fucking doing? It's incredible. It's so weird. It's kind of bad, but it's also one of the best things I've ever seen. And Tom Cruise. Oh my God. I love him so much.
I know.
I love him so much.
I haven't seen it.
He's such a good
forever.
Actor.
Yeah, I should rewatch it as God. Well.
God, it's a real
the ruffles intriguing.
Of ruffles.
The hair. Oh my God, it's so good. But the big thing is that last night I finally did a thing that I've been saying I would do for 3 years.
What is it?
Which is I watched Midsommar.
Say Titanic. I thought you were gonna say Titanic.
Oh, I will do that, but it's Halloween. But I finally watched Midsommar, watched the director's cut because that was all Marty had, so it was long, but it didn't feel long. It was the fastest 3 hours of my life, I gotta say.
It was 3 hours, geez.
Yeah, it was long. Oh my God, that movie is so good.
It's so good. It's so funny.
It's so funny. It is really upsetting. I was braced for the beginning part, but what I didn't expect to be the thing that really like bones chilled was her grieving. Oh, the way she screams. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Florence. Ooh.
Yeah.
She's
when she finds her family's dead.
When she finds out they're dead. Yeah. Oh. It's
It's done so well. Her screams blend into the title music.
It's very upsetting. It is very upsetting.
Incredible. But she's incredible. Everyone is so good. Mm. It's so fun. It's like, it's a masterpiece. Oh my God.
Even when they're jumping off the cliff and their legs are breaking and they're still alive.
I'll say this about the cliff. Thank God I knew that was coming. And here's the thing. When you told me about it, Sammy, I pictured them all being at the top of the cliff and the people jumping off and them looking down and seeing him at the bottom of the cliff.
Oh.
No, it's the opposite. They're all at the bottom of the cliff and the people jumping to them.
Front row seats.
So they are right there. And so are we. And oh my God. I was like, as soon as that scene started, I was like, oh my God. We're at the bottom of the cliff. Oh no, that's not what I thought was going to happen.
I pictured it the same way. Yeah, I pictured it the exact same
way. They're at the bottom.
And it's that really changes things.
And it is. Those look like the biggest, hardest rocks you've ever seen in your life. Wow, it's so good. But also it's really triumphant. And it, I think, is a super happy ending, as we talked about when we covered it. But like watching it, I was like, yes, fuck yes, Danny. Christian, also, it was conveyed to us via the retelling. But in watching it, wow, he's the worst. He's the worst fucking person ever. He's the worst.
What did you think? What did you think of the drug tripping scene?
It was very fun. It was really cool. There were more drug trips than I felt like I remembered there being, which were always really
right,
fun.
And,
like,
a bunch.
And it's like the background. It's just, it's such an incredible movie. It's an incredible movie. It is so
I
well
feel
done.
Like they're basically
every part
on
of it.
Drugs for the whole like third.
They're
act
on drugs
of
for a
movie.
Lot of it. Yeah. Yeah.
I was oh thinking God, of the shrooms. Incredible. The initial
the shrooms
one.
Shrooms
really
is
that one at the beginning, and that one's great.
Yeah.
That
it's
one
incredible. Scared me when I heard about it.
It's fucking, I really recommend, and I really didn't think it was scary. I really, and I know we covered it and so that helped, but like it's, you see everything coming a mile away. It's unsettling, but it is incredible.
Yeah.
It's incredible. I'm like, I can't stop thinking about it. Wow. And it's because of this podcast that I was able to do it.
Wow.
Yay.
She did it.
Yay.
Oh my God. Emily. Yeah,
so
proud.
Halloween.
So happy Halloween.
Did anything scary happen to you guys this week?
Well, the scary thing that happened to me this week is that someone recognized me on the street.
That's so crazy.
Is that
so
okay to
cool.
talk about on the podcast?
Yeah, I guess it happened to you.
The scary thing is how many people I've told, which is everyone now on the podcast too, including who's listening to this episode.
That's a wild thing to experience.
It just pierced the fourth wall of life in a way that like kind of scared me, like cut me deep to the bone, but it was still like such a lovely experience. It really rattled me.
You're not just chatting with your two friends.
Other people are
like,
listening.
Wait, what? Hold on. No, she was so nice. And I just had, it was such a lovely experience. And I, you know, don't really know what else to say except that it happened. And one thing about living in New York is you really do feel like you're living in your own little world, like walking around, even though there's so many people everywhere. So to have someone kind of like emerge from the crowd and be like, "Are you Henley?" I was like, "Oh, what?"
Isn't that crazy? I think about some, like, you know how sometimes if you're driving or in your case in New York walking and you like drive past someone or walk past someone, you know, and you go like, "Oh, that was so-and-so." But it's not enough of a moment to ever do anything with it. It's just like it's a thing that happens. And like every now and again, I remember that the reverse is true. Sometimes I'll be like walking in the world and someone I know will see me and I won't know that they did. And I don't know. It's like that's not quite the same, but it's just a way. It's like you just can't know.
I always wonder about this just reminded me. I always wonder about who has dreams about me because I'll have dreams about such random people, like someone from high school that is just like, where the fuck did that come from?
Like you didn't even remember they were still in your brain, let alone like,
And I'm like, that's happening in other people's brains too.
It's happening in other people's brains.
It's like, just give me a text. Just send me a text.
Send me a text.
In your dream.
Hey, if you dream about me,
send me a text and tell me what was happening. Tell me what I was doing. I want to know how I was manifested in your subconscious.
What do I represent to you?
I wish I remembered my dreams. I don't remember them ever. Do you guys remember them?
I usually do, yeah, and I have a lot.
Yeah, wow. Sammy, you do. You're have a good really at active dream life.
I remember them sometimes, but I would say the majority of the time I do not remember them.
No, I don't. Anyway, so you know what? What is the world we're living in? I do feel like
pretty cool.
It's probably a simulation. Probably. Like, the facts are stacking up.
The facts are stacking up for me, too. And I was going to talk about a thing this week, but I won't because it's too stupid. But, like, the facts are stacking up. And I feel like maybe that's what you're going to talk about. Wait,
what? Tell us what it is. Just tell us.
I found a duplicate of something that I'm certain I don't have two of. And so it's like, where did that come from?
Emily, I always love yours. I always love them.
Because it's like, I put my thing back in the place that it always goes. I cannot conceive of a time I would have gotten another one. Yes. And it was there already.
Wait, that's a really good one.
And I was like, but what? In all the time, it's like a nail tool that I use a lot, and I'm like, in all the times I've taken it and put it back in its spot, there's never another one there.
See, yeah, yours are creepy. Good because they're in like the physical realm. Mine are always like, I listened to an episode of Poog and they're talking about exactly what I was talking about like 2 weeks ago, and I'm like, no, it's just because I don't have original thoughts. Like, that's not the same thing as being in a simulation.
It could
like yours are like physical examples.
Okay, but also mine are usually I'm stupid and I did buy a second one, or I'm listening to the sound I'm already playing. Do you know what I mean? So anyway, let's see if Sammy's is good.
The wind chime was a funny example.
No, mine is just that I'm reading Recursion right now. And so
what is that?
The Blake Crouch one. I feel like you've read it.
Oh, no, I don't think so. Oh, I read his old Blake. I read the older Blake Crouch. Is that the newer one?
I don't know when it was from, but it's basically about, well, it starts out as being about something called false memory syndrome, and people start experiencing like lifetimes of memories that didn't happen that feel really, really real. Mm. And then you start learning that it's more about like time travel, space time. So it gets
Do you like it? Is it good? Weird.
Yeah, it's really good. Really good.
I'll read that. I read Dark Matter, and that came out in 2016. That's the only one I've ever read.
Yeah, they're similar. It's kind of like trippy, make me feel weird while I'm reading them. Hurt my brain a little bit, but in a fun way.
In a fun way. I'm reading Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow.
Kurt Vonnegut?
Which is new. No. Oh, God. I wish I was fucking cool enough to be reading Kurt Vonnegut. Recently, Tim was trying to get me to read Kurt Vonnegut because he loves it so much. And I tried. I don't even know trying to read. I know.
They really do.
I've tried so many times. I've tried so many times, you guys.
Yeah, and I've never tried.
I'm just like, I don't care. Like, really? And there are quotes from him that I really like. And I don't know. It's not, I'm going to be brave enough to say that I don't really like Kurt Vonnegut.
That's crazy.
Kurt Vonnegut is your music. You know?
That's crazy.
You got to be brave enough to say that you don't like something.
Such an asshole response from Sandy. That's crazy.
That's crazy.
I guess I haven't read anything by him in a long time, so I don't know. But I remember being pretty into it at the time.
Pretty like high school.
I know that I'm the one in the wrong here. I just need to give it.
I will try, and I will let you know which one of you is correct.
Thanks, Emily.
You're welcome.
Okay, Sammy, what's your thing?
Friends are for.
This is just something that took up more of my headspace than it should have, which is that this week Matthew Perry said, Matthew Perry was quoted in his book. I think there's two different parts in his memoir.
There are two different parts
where he says, "Why is River Phoenix dead and while Keanu Reeves still walks among us?"
It's a crazy. So many reasons. It's also just so crazy that none of his publishers were like, let's take that part out.
Let's maybe not.
And let's not do it twice.
That's the thing. It's like one thing to say offhand, like, why is Keanu Reeves still alive while River Phoenix is dead? Or Chris Farley was the other person that he said it about. Yeah. And it's one thing to like maybe accidentally say that in an interview, but to write it twice in a book that has to be reviewed and like edited, and it's just so crazy and it's so mean and
it's so weird.
Such a weird thing to say.
Does he know Keanu Reeves personally?
He has to have something in him that is opposed to Keanu.
I think this is the scary part for me. I need to understand why he did this. Mm-hmm. And I think I kind of got there in the end. And I think it's that, I mean, he is an addict, and he's talking about two addicts, Chris Farley and River Phoenix, that died of overdoses. And Keanu Reeves was friends with River Phoenix, and apparently Matthew Perry, like, thinks he didn't do enough to intervene with his friend. And so it's like him projecting kind of his that's own things onto Keanu not Reeves.
How that works.
But I watched Matthew Perry's Diane Sawyer interview. I was just like, I need to understand how anyone could hate Keanu Reeves. Like, what?
You're like, Diane, ask the question. Diane, ask. Diane,
this is why you got the interview, Diane.
But yeah, it just really shook me that anyone could.
You don't ever hear of people hating Keanu Reeves.
Could hate
like
Keanu.
Ever. Like just he's not right.
What a weird target to choose. Just someone so beloved, so notoriously kind and like good to his fans and good to the crew of his films and like really hardworking and just like loves what he does.
He's a good man.
I think that and would be something that Sammy, would it like, what would it mean to you if Keanu Reeves, it came out that he was bad? What if
I would
he got
be
canceled?
Really, really upset.
That would be so upsetting.
It would really, really be devastating.
It won't, but that's the
he
thing.
He doesn't
is
even put
not...
his hands on women's backs when he takes photos with them.
Yeah, the Keanu hand, it floats.
It floats behind their backs because he doesn't want to touch anybody inappropriately. He's very conscious of everything
it just
he does.
That's, I didn't know that. That's huge.
He's perfect. and it's, we're just, look. There are some people who some of us love dearly, who there are probably some really bad things about in the world.
Tom Cruise.
But Keanu's not one of them. Is maybe it's Tom, maybe it's not, but it's not. It's not Keanu. And we can all hold that.
Yeah, let's not go anywhere near that. It's not even fun to like imagine the counterfactual there.
It's not even fun.
So we won't. We won't do that.
Not even close to fun.
No, it's not fun. But Matthew, speak up. tell us more.
I think he did apologize, by the way. I think because of the...
But did he give context?
I think maybe what I said was like what I read in his response.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Being like, I'm taking it out on... wow. You know.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yep. Just spent a lot of time thinking about this week.
Did his book come out?
I believe it did, yes.
Did you read it?
Matthew Perry's book?
I have not read it quite yet. You know, I'm not actually a big fan of autobiographies.
Me either.
Really? I don't love a memoir, but I might check it out. But I say that a lot of times with celebrities' books because I'm like curious, but then when it comes down to it, I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if I'm that curious.
Did you read Matthew McConaughey's Green Lights?
I sure didn't.
People fucking loved it.
Tim and I tried to listen to it because we heard so much about it and it was like really
listen
tough.
To it, it though seems listen. Fun. Is he the reader, I presume?
Yeah, yeah, he's the reader. Oh, he's the reader. Oh, he's the reader. It's a lot.
He's the reader.
And he's out. Yeah. Oh, whatever. That's a whole other conversation. All right. Should we fucking get into this movie?
Let's talk about this week's movie.
We should.
Okay. This week's movie is The Black Coat's Daughter. Mm-hmm. Ooh. And I watched it.
Wow.
So everyone.
Huge week.
The crowd goes wild.
She's so brave.
All right. So it was written and directed by Oz Perkins. And it's starring Emma Roberts, Kiernan Shipka, Lucy Boynton, and James
Boynton.
Remar.
I didn't know Boynton was in it.
Boynton? Oh, yeah. Boynton.
Oh, we got Boynton.
We got Boynton.
Oh, we got Boynton.
We love Boynton. Boynton.
Do you guys know who... Do you guys know who James Remar is? Remar?
No.
You would recognize him in a heartbeat. Right, he's kind of a that guy. The thing I know him from is he is the dad in Dexter. Oh, so he's always in his flashbacks.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, he was a that guy.
He was also in Vampire Diaries, which, man, I didn't even talk about the content I watched this week. Almost exclusively Vampire Diaries,
oh my
but
God.
Also.
Henley, I almost started it last night.
It is so good, Sammy. It is irreproachable. It is perfect. It is it's the only thing I ever want to watch for the rest of my life.
Wow.
It's those early 2000s outfits. Oh my God. Anyway, I also watched The Witches of Eastwick, which I have a lot to say about too.
Mm.
But we don't need to get into that right now. This movie was released by A24. It was filmed in 2015, came out in 2017.
Sorry, real quick, are those three women supposed to look identical? Is that part of the plot of this movie? Because I just pulled up the cast on to Google to see, and the image that comes up of the three of them in a row is like, I'm seeing the same face three times, and it's really tripping me out.
Well, one thing they have that's connected is that they have all worked with Ryan Murphy. So each of them have worked with Ryan Murphy.
That must be it.
You must be seeing the Ryan
that
Murphy.
That's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing the Ryan Murphy.
It must be because Ryan Murphy has a type. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, I'm not going to answer that question.
Okay. Oh, okay. Great.
5.9 on IMDb, 74% on Rotten Tomatoes, and a 68% on Metacritic.
Okay.
The box office says it made $38,000. So.
Not great. Not great. That is not good.
I think it was mostly released direct to streaming. It was like mostly released on DirecTV. It did have a theater release, but limited.
One theater, one day.
Well, yeah, pretty limited.
And I couldn't find the budget, so I don't know.
Yeah, they don't want you to know. Was.
It was its director, Mike Flanagan. Ever heard of him?
Heard of him.
He lists this as his favorite horror movie, according to Screen Rant.
We've had it requested quite a lot.
Yeah, I mean.
Wow.
People like this movie. I'm excited to hear about it.
Well, the writer and director, Osgood Perkins, is... here's some more trivia. I just launched into the trivia. He's a horror movie royalty. He's the son of Anthony Perkins, who's the actor who played Norman Bates.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in Psycho. As well as its three sequels. So this was...
Is Oz Perkins hot, I presume, then?
Oh my God, look it up. I don't know. I didn't see any pics. I mean, let's pause the podcast.
This is really important.
We all went silent. I would really like to please keep in the length of pause that we just did in real time to find out if he's hot.
Yeah, he saw it.
Okay, cool. Okay. That was worth it. Yeah,
that was worth it. But he's also kind of a little scary looking.
He was an actor in a bunch of things, but in little tiny roles. Like he was in Legally Blonde, technically, as like a little side role.
Technically. I'm technically and Legally Blonde.
This movie was initially titled February.
Okay.
And when
a spooky month.
Emma Roberts read the script for the film, she couldn't sleep afterwards because it scared her so much.
Oh my gosh.
Wowie.
Should we just do
Shall we get into it? Ooh, I'm really excited. Yeah.
I have tried a lot of meal kits in my day because I don't like to cook. I need as much help as I can get when it comes to meal times. But a lot of the kits I've tried, you know, they leave a little something to be desired. They're not super great quality, or maybe there's not great variety, or they feel just kind of unhealthy. So imagine my surprise when I found Marley Spoon and discovered it doesn't have to be that way. You can have it all. I'm so happy this podcast is sponsored by Marley Spoon. They created the best tasting meal kit money can buy, and with my code TOOSCARY, you can get up to 25 free meals. They have over 100 meals to choose from each week, so you will not be getting bored. Last night, I made a shrimp burrito bowl that was so good, and tonight I'm making a Shion-style cumin turkey burger with pickled veggies and five-spice fries. Excuse me, am I a five-star chef? You have any idea how boring all the stuff I usually make is? It's such a treat. And usually for something like this, I would pay probably $40 to have something delivered to me. And it would probably be gross and soggy by the time it got here anyways. So thank God for Marley Spoon. And you can customize many of the recipes. So whether you're looking for vegetarian, family friendly, low carb, they got you covered. They also have an online market of pantry essentials like snacks and ready to eat options. I'm telling you, You can have it all. I got a kit to make cookies in my first box. So experience the most personalized meal kit today with Marley Spoon. Head to marleyspoon.com/offer/too scary and use code too scary for up to 25 free meals. That's right, up to 25 free meals with Marley Spoon. One last time, that's marleyspoon.com/offer/too scary for up to 25 free meals. And make sure you use my promo code too scary so they know I sent you.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season two is out now from Lemonada Media.
Yes, Stanley, I'm so proud of you. Tell us about it.
Okay.
All right. The most important thing for you guys to know about this movie is that it's very moody and atmospheric.
Okay.
It's the entire color palette is very dark gray, dark blues. Everyone's extremely pale. Mm-hmm. It's not a vampire movie. Mm-hmm. It's not. So get your head out of that space.
Okay.
But it is, I mean, the alternate title is February. It takes place
winter, cold,
in like deep dark. Winter, cold. Yes, yes.
February, a very tough month.
It's a tough month, especially in the Northeast where they are. It starts with a creepy, haunting song called Black Coat's Daughter. Mm. And it's this creepy woman. I wish I could. I'll try to sing it. She's like, deedle, deedle.
Deedle, deedle. That's not where I expected this to start.
Deedle, deedle. Deedle, deedle.
It's a very creepy song.
Just imagine. Deedle. You just have to trust me that it is very creepy. Okay, I can't sing it, but the lyrics are Black Coat's Daughter, what was in the holy water, gone to bed on an unclean head, the angels, they forgot her. Ooh.
All right.
Everyone's sufficiently scared.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the first shot is of Kiernan Shipka. She's asleep in bed. There are very loud strings. The music is very moody and sad and instrumental the entire time. It's cutting between her asleep in her dormitory bed and then of the dream that she's having. And in her dream, she's alone. She's walking through an empty landscape that's covered in snow. And then suddenly this kind of tall black figure appears next to her, starts walking. You can't see him. You can kind of only see his torso. And it's cutting between that and then her back in the bedroom in different like poses sleeping. And then at one point she kind of wakes up and a dark figure like passes over the screen and she like looks tired and she goes, "Daddy, you came early." And then one thing to note about the performances across the board for everyone, almost expressionless. Like no one is giving emotion in this film. Everyone is very muted, very flat the entire time.
Interesting.
So then it cuts back to her dream and she sees a car burning in the distance and she looks sad and devastated and she just says, "Mommy."
Okay.
That's how it opens.
That's all we need.
We get it. Mommy in a burning car. Daddy came early.
Mm-hmm. Daddy came
deedle,
early.
Deedle,
deedle. Deedle, So then she's awake. It's starting her day. It's very, very early. It's basically dark outside. And she's slowly marking off days on her calendar.
What time period is this, did you say?
It's right now. It's like 2015.
Okay, I was imagining like 1800s. Didn't the mood kind of create an 1800s-y type vibe?
I thought it was going to be like that when I looked at the title.
Black Coat's Daughter, yeah, feels like it would be.
I'm glad I asked because I was picturing the wrong thing.
Well, one weird thing I will tell you about this movie is that even though it takes place like in modern time, one thing to note is that there are like no cell phones. I mean, they are using payphones and like physical phones,
okay.
Landlines. She's awake. She's marking off the days of her calendar until it's today. It's February 22nd. And on that day, she's written "Mom and Dad" in a heart. And so clearly today's the day they are coming. She's going to see her. Kiernan Shipka's character is named Catherine. She goes to a Catholic girls' boarding school called the Bramford School. And this whole movie takes place over a weekend. And it's the last day before her winter break. And there's a school recital. She's performing in it. And she's kind of summoned to Father Brian's office, who I guess is maybe her music teacher or someone, to let her know that he won't be able to make it to her recital. She seems disappointed, but again, Kiernan Shipka's performance is so reserved that it's hard to know exactly what she's thinking. At one point during the conversation, she looks in the corner of the room and kind of very slightly smiles. And Father Brian is like, is something funny? She's like, no. And he's like, you smiled. And she's like, oh. And that's kind of how a lot of the dialogue goes in this movie.
Okay. All right.
It's very tense and awkward. Then we meet Lucy Boynton's character. Her name is Rose. It's picture day. She is walking in to get her picture taken, and we get a very extended kind of slow-mo shot of her walking into the classroom. She's like, she's flinging her hair over her shoulder. She looks pretty sad. She sits down on the stool and then slowly lifts her head up to get her picture taken, and a huge smile comes across her face. The picture's taken, and then the smile slowly goes down, and she looks extremely depressed again, and then walks out of the room. And there's just this long extended scene of that happening.
Okay.
She goes to the nurse with a headache. They give her some pills, and then she chats with her friend outside smoking a cigarette. And she's talking about how she's anxious because she's 4 days late on her period. And her friend is like, are you going to tell the guy? She's like, I don't know. Do you think I should? Just not sure what to do. And then the next scene is her sitting alone in an auditorium, listening to the principal give a very condescending speech about good conduct over break. And the speech is not important, but the thing that's weird is at the end, he finishes by going, sound good. And then the entire auditorium goes, sounds good.
They all
respond that way. It's not culty or anything. It's just more just a weird school thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then we get a shot of all the cars coming in. The parents are arriving for the recital. Everyone's being picked up to go home for winter break. Catherine is standing outside on the driveway waiting for the cars, watching all of them roll through. Her parents are not arriving. She's looking very sad. Kiernan Shipka then goes on stage to do her performance. And it is really mediocre, extremely mediocre. She just plays piano. No, I think she's given it her all. I don't know.
I think in the movie, this is it. It's
are we as an audience supposed to think that it's mediocre?
I think as an audience are thinking this is just an extremely normal 14-year-old girl.
Yeah, okay.
She's supposed to be a freshman.
Got it. This is not. Yeah. Okay.
She's playing the piano. She's singing. I mean, in the beginning, you thought maybe she was going to be some kind of music prodigy or something, the way she was having this conversation with Father Brian, where he was like, I'm so sorry. I've been working so hard. I'm going to miss your recital.
Got it. But she's just fine.
But she's just normal.
Mm-hmm.
She finishes her performance. She glances out into the auditorium. No one's there. Her parents have not arrived. Catherine and Rose are, after the recital, they're both summoned to the principal's office to ask why their parents haven't shown up. The principal, Mr. Gibson, he's like, Catherine, have you tried calling them? We've tried calling them. We haven't heard from them. We don't know where they are. Rose, where are your parents? And Rose tells him I just got the days wrong. I told my parents to come on Friday. They're not going to be here till Friday. And he's pissed. He's like, you guys can't live here, but fine. You can stay here. The nuns will be here. You can hang out with them. And Rose, you have to take care of Catherine because she's a freshman. And yeah. Are you guys so scared yet?
Terrified.
Yeah, it's really spooky.
Rose is not into this idea. And later she tells Catherine she's going out. She's like, I'm not going to take care of you. Catherine, so sad. You guys, Karen Shipka, she's just sad, you know?
Yeah, okay. 14's a hard age.
It's a very hard age. She's like, Mr. Gibson said, you have to look after me. And Rose is like, I don't give a fuck what Mr. Gibson said. Mm. Don't go into my room. Don't touch my stuff. Like, I'm going out. And then she just slides in a fun little anecdote about how the nuns worship the devil. She's like, the nuns don't have any hair. Have you ever looked at their eyebrows? Their eyebrows are fake. They don't have any hair anywhere on their body.
Because of devil worshiping?
They worship the devil.
Huh.
And Catherine's like, where did you hear this? And Rose doesn't answer. So.
Interesting.
The first thing Catherine does, obviously, when Rose leaves, is go into her room and touch all her stuff.
Yeah.
So she goes and picks up her hairbrush, and there's a long, moody shot of her staring at her hairbrush as Rose leaves to go on a date with this guy who's impregnated her, potentially. All right. Cut to a bus station. Now we meet Emma Roberts' character. She is looking sad too. Man, you guys, everyone is sad as fuck. It's February. In this movie. Mm-hmm. It's February. It's dark. It's in the middle of the night. She's arrived on a bus. She's alone. She's clearly run away from a psychiatric hospital.
Okay.
She's having these kind of quick flashes of memory of a doctor examining her, of another patient struggling in restraints. Mm. And back in the bus station, she goes into the bathroom and is like breathing heavily, and she rips off a hospital bracelet that she has on. Then she goes back outside. She's waiting for another bus to come. And a man, this is the dad in Dexter. Mm. I can't even remember the actor's name now. John Ramar, something like that.
Sounds right.
Yeah, he walks past her and asks her if she needs a ride.
Uh-oh.
This actor's the perfect guy to play this part because he is truly equally, like, comforting. Because most of the characters mm-hmm. I've seen him play have been, like, good characters.
Great.
But he's also really threatening. Like, he has a really deep voice. He's pretty tall. And he's something, like, creepy about him, mm-hmm. honestly.
Yeah.
So he asks her if she needs a ride. He's like, I promise I'm okay. Like, you'll be safe with me.
Well, if you promise. Oh, well.
He points to his car, which is idling in the distance just with the headlights.
See, I have running. A car.
And he's like, my wife is in the car. Like, just come. You'll be fine. Like, we can take you where you need to go. I'm like, don't get in that fucking car. Mm-hmm. But then we cut to her. Get in the car, and the wife is in the car. She's in the front seat. Hmm. And Emma says she wants to go to Portsmouth, and they say that they're going right next to it to a town called Bramford.
Okay.
And she doesn't look happy about it, but she's kind of like, okay. So then we cut back to Rose and Catherine. Rose gets back home from her date. She's told the boy about the baby, and he wants to help her, but she just breaks up with him. She checks in on Catherine's room because, you know, she's supposed to be taking care of her, and it's empty. Mm. So she's like, oh, fuck. And she goes to the bathroom to get ready to go to bed, and she starts hearing voices coming through the vents. And then she starts hearing some thumping coming through the vents.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So cue now, just like the longest, eeriest walk through mm-hmm. dormitory hallways.
Like empty, you could
it, dark.
Everyone else has
hairless
left.
Nuns.
Hairless nuns. It reminds me of the witches in Roald Dahl. Remember how they all like were hairless and disgusting?
Yep.
So this part of the film, like, there's no music. It's quiet except for the doors opening and closing.
Ooh,
and
freaky.
All of the doors just need to be greased. They need some WD-40 so
ooh,
bad. Like, it's
yeah.
just creaking.
Creaky.
It's creaking. And she's walking. He keeps hearing this thumping, and she's hearing it downstairs. So she walks
are
downstairs.
Are they, like, basically the only two people in this building?
It's completely empty and completely
oof,
dark.
Oof, oof.
That's
and
scary.
It's also, like, the middle of the night. She's come back from her day. It's always like constantly feels like it's the middle of the night. And so finally she reaches the basement. She goes down into the basement. She gets finally to the final room there, which is the boiler room. And she looks through a little glass window. And we just get a quick shot of Catherine in front of the boiler, like on her knees, just slamming her head into the ground.
Oh my God. And that's probably a really hard ground.
Like cement.
That's the thumping. That's the
thumping. Oh my God. That's like echoing through the whole building.
And she obviously is like, her eyes get, you know, Rose's eyes get super huge.
I leave
she gasps.
For one fucking night. This girl is slamming her head on the ground.
But we quickly cut away from that back to Emma Roberts' character. Her name is Joan, by the way. Joan wakes up in a hotel room. So last we saw, she was in a car. Now she's in a hotel room with a little note next to her that said, "I thought I should let you sleep, Bill." Bill's the guy that picked her up.
Does she seem like confused?
She seems like not okay. Everyone, the entire time, no one seems okay in this movie. No one's ever okay. She seems like confused and doesn't know what to do, disoriented. She grabs her purse and empties it out and goes through it. Then she goes into the bathroom and undresses to take a shower. And we see that there's a healed over bullet wound, hole in her shoulder. She's also like covered in bruises, and she has a quick flash of a man shooting a gun at her, and then a quick flash of that of Father Bill, the guy we saw earlier, his face hovering over her. Not the same guy, the guy who shot her is someone else. So,
and this bit Father Bill isn't the same as Bill.
Oh, yeah, no, wait, no, it's not the same. Wait, are both their names? Maybe it's Father Brian.
Father Brian sounds right.
Yeah, I think
the other guy's Bill.
Pretty crazy if they had.
It'd be very funny if they were all named Bill and it wasn't a thing.
No, obviously it's Father Brian. Yes.
Father Brian. Okay. Got it.
So she's showering, she gets out, she wraps herself in a towel, and then there's a knock at her door. She's looking pretty anxious. She slowly walks over to the door. She looks through the little peephole. She obviously recognizes it. It's Bill. He's like, "Can I come in?"
No.
And she's like, "Okay," and just lets him in. He comes in, she sits on the bed, he sits down across from her, and he's like, "I guess you're pretty tired. You slept for 4 hours. You know, you fell asleep as soon as we got in the car. I thought that you clearly needed some rest." She's like not talking at all. And then she says, "Why are you helping me?" And he asks her if she believes in God. And she says no. She's like, no. She's clearly really traumatized and very in like certain that she does not believe in God. And he says, he gives her this whole like kind of monologue about how he believes in God. He sees God in coincidences, and that strange as it may sound, he saw God in her because she really recognized, she was really familiar to him, and she reminded him of someone that he knows.
I mean, if some man offers me a ride and then puts me up in a hotel and tells me that I'm so familiar to him, I'm at a level 10 fear, terrified.
Level 10?
This level is 10,
this is bad. This is very bad.
Does she look very scared?
She looks very scared. She's also like huddled in her towel. She's just sitting in a towel.
I want her to be wearing clothes.
Yeah. And of course. And then at this point, I think I messed up. I think that at this point he says they're going to Bramford. And she's like, "Where's your wife?"
Great question.
And he's like, "She's sleeping."
Bad answer.
She's sleeping. So you're like, I don't like any of this. Mm-hmm. But then you cut back to Catherine and Rose. So Catherine is now taking a shower. Rose is standing outside of the shower. She's like, "You're sleepwalking, right?" She just is like, "You're sleepwalking. Like, do you do that a lot?" Like, that's what was happening, right? She's clearly convinced herself that like,
Everything's fine.
What she saw was maybe normal. And Catherine, Kieran and Chipka, you guys.
Is she like bloody? Is her head fucked up?
No, she's fine. She's completely fine. Oh. She just says from the shower, she goes,
Oof.
And,
give us nothing, Catherine.
Yeah, she's giving us nothing. She's giving us nothing. And then they go back into Catherine's room. She's like getting into her pajamas. She gets into bed and Rose is, you know, telling her like, it's going to be okay. Like our parents are going to come tomorrow and we're going to leave and it's all going to be fine. And, and Catherine just says like, my parents are dead. And Rose is like, that's not funny. You're not being funny. Like, stop joking about that. That's really messed up. Like, just don't make jokes like that. Okay, it's time to go to bed. Like, we're going to bed. Can I get you anything else? And Catherine just goes, no, you had your chance.
Oh, my God.
And Rose is like, okay. And
oh, no.
Goes back to her room. Everything in this movie is like so muted. Like there's like such little actual dialogue. It's so silent most of the time. And so then Rose like goes back into her room and she's kind of like, what the fuck? Like, everything's fine or is it not fine? Like, what the hell?
Where are the nuns?
She pushes her dresser in front of her bed and in front of her door.
Sure.
Just to be safe.
Won't stop Satan.
Might work. So then we get a quick shot of Catherine sleeping. She's sleeping in bed. She starts kind of grunting and writhing. And then just the quickest shot you've ever seen, she's on her stomach. Suddenly her legs just fly up over her head and her feet go next to her head. Like she does like a backwards, like whoop, like completely contorts her body, like just really quickly. And it's so fast and so like quiet. It's just like, doop, 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 boop, and then it's over. And that's all you see.
Or it cuts away or she goes back to laying normal.
No, it cuts away. Like you just see her. It'd be very funny if they go like. You don't see it go back. You just see it go forward. But it's so
fast.
Is it like something that
so, like,
you think Kiernan Shipka's body did? Or is there like some sort of.
No. Imagine. Okay, this is it. Imagine you're sleeping on your stomach. Then imagine bringing your feet up.
Next to your head.
This way and putting them next to your head. Can you imagine doing that?
This is my head. These are my legs. They go shh.
And then your feet land next to your head.
That would be crazy.
Just like really fast, too.
But does it
you
look
do it
like
really fast.
VFX or is it like they got like a little body double contortionist?
They got a contortionist and they did it from like the other side of the room. So you can kind of just see her silhouette. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you see her head on the pillow. And she's,
then you
her
see
head
her
is on
there.
The pillow and she kind of opens her eyes and she like grunts. And then you cut to the far away shot and you see her legs go up and go over her head and then it's over.
Crazy that there are contortionists who can do that. That's
I mean, remember what? Malignant?
I do.
That was.
Do I ever?
Will it ever top that? I don't know. Mm. This is like the kiddies table comparatively. So cut back to Joan, Emma Roberts. She's back in that hotel room. She has her towel on. Bill is inviting her down for dinner. He says his wife isn't around, but he's like, you're probably hungry. Will you come downstairs and eat dinner with me?
So his wife, did his wife have eyebrows and hair on her head?
Yeah. You didn't really see her. You did see her kind of clearly for like 1 second. She was in the driver's or the passenger seat of the car. She looks like pissed off that they picked up Emma Roberts. Okay. So she goes downstairs to have dinner with him. It's just him. And he, at this dinner, he immediately is like, the person you remind me of is my daughter. We lost her 9 years ago. And we're going to her grave to put flowers on it. We go every year. It's the anniversary of her death tomorrow. And he's like, do you want to see a picture of her? And he takes out a picture of her from his wallet, hands it over. And It's Rose. It's Rose. It's Lucy Boynton's character.
It's Lucy Boynton.
Yeah. It's Lucy Boynton's character.
That's interesting. Okay.
So it's that picture we saw, remember, in the beginning, her picture day. Yeah, where she was slow-mo walking into the room, big smile. We see,
which was the same day that they didn't get picked up.
That they didn't get picked up. It's Lucy Boynton.
And it has it felt like we were in the past?
No. So that's part of what the twist is. It's we think that we are in the same timeline, but it's actually 9 years later. It's 9 years later. And
Okay.
Emma Roberts like looks at the picture and she's like, I have to go to the bathroom. And she gets up and she runs into the bathroom and she runs into the stall and she like puts her hand over her mouth and she starts laughing. And she starts laughing.
What? I bet. I feel like I have a theory.
Okay. Keep going.
And all of a sudden, while she's laughing, you get a quick shot of her, of Emma Roberts strangling someone and then stealing the purse that she has. The purse that she's went through earlier when she woke up. It's not her purse. It's whoever she killed. She steals the purse and then looks at the driver's license and it's not Emma Roberts, but it says Joan. So that's the like identity she's assumed.
Got it.
So Emma Roberts is bad.
She's bad.
Bad news bears.
Wow. Twist. It wasn't the guy.
So when she goes back out to see Bill, he's speaking with a police officer. She clearly looks scared. She's like, oh, fuck. Why is he talking to a police officer? But it's just that they're going to get snowed in if they stay. So they need to leave that night to avoid the storm. So then we cut to Joan sitting in back in the car with his wife. She's back. She's in the passenger side seat. They're just quiet per usual. Very awkward, very tense. And then the wife starts going on this whole monologue where she's like,
this is why Mike Flanagan loves it.
Yeah, that's true. This is an inspiration. It was an inspiration for him. A whole monologue like, did he say you looked like her? He always tells everyone they look like her. They never do. You don't look anything like her.
Okay, well, I've
never seen it. I've never seen it. Like, did he tell you she was murdered? Did he mention that part? He never mentions that part. Did he say have? We have a daughter? We don't. We had a daughter. Like, this woman is clearly pissed. This has clearly happened before. It's a thing that happens where he picks up like young women that maybe remind him of his daughter.
I wouldn't love it either. I wouldn't love it.
And it's just really sad. And Emma Roberts is just not responding. She's just sitting in the back, like, expressionless.
She's trying so hard not to laugh in the lady's face.
<He's> like, this HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Auraframes.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Auraframe.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, wow.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Auraframes are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Auraframe, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
So, cut back to Catherine and Rose. Rose is waking up. She's not dead yet, you guys. She's still alive. She's still alive. She walks out into the hallway. Catherine is hanging up the phone. There's a payphone in the hallway of their dorm. And she's she says that she just spoke to Mr. Gordon.
Okay, so I want to just say, you have to get to it if this makes it in the episode, because Henley just froze. We had to take a quick pause. We looked up Osgood Perkins. And Henley, he's not just technically in Legally Blonde. He is in Legally Blonde. He's like a character in Legally Blonde.
Which character?
He's the guy, the dorky guy in law school with her who she like tells him that he's like getting rejected by a girl who's like, why would I want to date with you? You're like cute. And she tells him, you gave me the best sex of my life and then you didn't even call me. Anyway,
that was a key character.
Key character, big moment.
She was such a good person. I mean, what a role model, you know? Elle Woods.
Elle Woods. I fucking love Legally Blonde.
We were so lucky to get to grow up with someone like Elle Woods in our lives.
Really, so a true role model for women. Honestly, though, it holds up. It really does. Okay. So she hasn't died yet.
She hasn't died yet, you guys.
Kieran Shipka hangs up a payphone.
Up a payphone. She says she just spoke to Mr. Gordon and he says she can't live here, but she can live with him. Rose is like, that's weird. But they go to eat with the nuns. Cue nuns. The nuns are not wearing habits. They're just wearing normal clothes, which is like a little disappointing to me.
And like wigs? Fake eyebrows?
I'm like wondering if this is supposed to be like, what is the time period supposed to be? Because they are dressed. People are going to be like, that is so dumb. Like, it was obviously a different. Does it say anywhere in any of these descriptions the time period? No, it doesn't.
It's kind of unanchored vague. In time,
like modern, but maybe not today.
I feel like sometimes they do that intentionally in movies, like It Follows is like that justify. As well, where it's some things are futuristic and some things are like 80s style.
The nuns are dressed like they're from the 70s, but then also I think part of what's hard too is that they're wearing like Catholic girl uniforms the entire time. So
they're just what they are.
But then, you know how we've talked about this before, how like actors are so modern looking, and I feel like Emma Roberts, Lucy Boynton, and Kieran Shipka are so modern looking.
I know.
So it throws me off. I can't really tell. So they are having the quietest, saddest meal you've ever seen in your life with these two nuns, but they're about to, say grace. And Kieran Shipka, Catherine, she's looking really pale. She's not looking good. She's looking even paler than she was looking at the beginning of the film. Hair is kind of a mess. She's not saying grace. One of the nuns is like chastising her for it. And, she tells her that she needs to say grace. So she starts doing it, but she starts kind of laughing and the nuns are getting more upset. She's trying not to laugh, but you know what? Too bad, because she stands up and she does something even better. She barfs everywhere.
She barfing is better than laughing. We all know it.
And everyone is looking pretty grossed out. So they take her to the nurse's office examine her.
Does it seem like...
like a satanic barf?
Yeah, like a possessed type barf or like...
It's not like an exorcism going across the room barf, but it's definitely not either like a normal barf either. Like sort it's of a like... little-
also, yeah, to like stand up and then barf is pretty weird.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever barfed in public? Or like embarrassing throw up?
I don't...
situation?
I'm sure I have.
What kind of vomiters are you guys? Are you guys pretty chill about it or pretty hate doing it?
Oh, I am. I secret that away as well as possible. You know what I mean? Like, I've definitely thrown up like secretly before, like being too drunk.
Ooh, you're like a good sneaky vomiter.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like no one will notice. But then again, I'm so drunk, people probably did notice, and I'm just so drunk that I just like pretend like it didn't happen.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Are you trying to tell us you're really obvious with Barfer?
No, I was thinking that would be really crazy to stand up and throw up on the table,
that would be awful. Oof, I don't like thinking about that. She's in the office, she's in the nurse's office, she's not doing well, she's looking pale, sweaty, she looks very sick, and the nuns are like mad at her because she's kind of being an asshole, and they are trying to like see what's going on, and one of the nuns like touches her face, and Catherine like pushes her hand away and she says, "Get your hands off of me, cunt." And the nuns are like, "Oh, what the fuck?" But then she used the C word. But before they can really react, like right at that moment, the phone rings in the other room. And the nuns go to answer it. They're just two of
all
nuns,
of them?
By the way. There's two of them. There's two
okay. There's like a whole group of nuns be like, hold on.
There's a flock of them.
We have to go all answer the phone together.
We answer it on speakerphone and all say hello at the same time.
Hello.
Hello, nunnery.
You have the nuns.
Then we see a shot of them answering the phone in the distance in the other room. They're looking shocked as hell. And what you can tell is that they're getting the call that Catherine's parents are dead. Like, that's just what you know, because they're looking at her. They're looking like shocked. They don't know what to do. Mm. Rose goes into the room to be like, what's going on?
Wait, and she's already said that her parents are dead, right?
Well, she said
but it was like maybe
in such
a
weird way where it was like, how do you know that? And are you serious?
Are you making a joke?
Okay.
Yeah.
Clearly not.
Yep.
But she, and also remember the first thing we have is her dreaming, her having that dream of like, it seems like her parents have died. Like in that dream, her like seeing the car being exploded and her saying, mommy, it feels like pretty ominous. So Rose goes in to be like, what's going on? And the nuns are like, go shovel the walkway. just shovel it till you can see the grass, till you can see the ground. And Rose is like, what the fuck? Why? And they're like, just go do it. And so
just go do it.
Just don't ask questions. Rose goes out. She's shoveling and shoveling and shoveling. And then mark your bingo cards because she hears, you guessed it, a record player. Needle scratch record player. It's coming from the house where she just was, where the nurse's office is like in an old house, and it's where the nuns maybe live or something. She goes and she knocks on the door. She's like, what's with this music that's blasting from here? And she can't get in. The door's locked. She's like trying the doorknob. No one's answering. She can't get in. The police and a detective arrive, and we see an image of them like also trying to get into the house. They can't. And they kind of like walk around the house. They go through the back, and then there's a really slow 360 shot of the inside of the house. It's empty until you kind of finally reach a doorway where there's blood splattered all over the door. And we see the policeman walk through the back of the house and stop and look down on the ground and just cover his mouth, shocked.
Wait, and is this the house that we think that Catherine and the nuns were in?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So then we cut back to a few, like 2 days ago or a day ago or whatever it was. And we're back with Catherine. And we start over kind of with her. So with Rose and with Jones, we each got like title cards for them where it was like Joan and then Rose. And we haven't gotten that for Catherine. So we go back to her waking up and we get a title card and it just says Cat. And we kind of watch everything that we already saw her go through. We watch her marking off her calendar. We watch her, you know, finding out about the recital, blah, blah, blah. And then we get the only thing that's different really is that she has a phone call. We see her have a phone call in that creepy payphone in the hallway, and it's all staticky, and she can't hear anything, and she's going, "Daddy, Daddy, are you there?" And you just hear this deep, distorted voice on the other end, and he tells her to, he's like, "Yes, I'm here. Like, kill the cunts."
Kill the cunts?
Oh my god.
And then she just hangs up the phone and she looks kind of shocked. And the thing that's like really crazy about Kiernan Shipka's performance throughout all of this is you can't tell like where is it just her and where is it her like kind of being
possessed?
Like, possessed. Like you just can't tell. Like it's she just kind of plays it the same way like the entire time. Like
intentionally or she's a bad actor? Because I kind of
Probably she's a bad actor. But you know, this movie, it's a little interesting. I don't know. The line is hard to tell. But then, you know, we continue to see shots of Catherine throughout the day. The main thing to know is that this boarding school is sad as hell. I mean, she just looks so sad the entire time. And she, you know, does her recital. She listens to, you hear her listening to Rose tell her she can't take care of her, blah, blah, blah. Rose going off on her date.
So Rose was a cunt.
Yeah. Rose, such a cunt.
Well, the nuns were cunts too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nuns are also cunts.
You gotta kill the cunts.
Then you see after Rose goes on her date, the phone rings again and Catherine goes and picks it up and it's a creepy distorted voice saying, "You can stay with me." And then we cut to a scene of the nuns on the ground back to the day where Catherine threw up everywhere and they're on the ground. There's blood everywhere. They're bleeding out. One of them is like dragging herself across the ground. The other one is like spasming on the ground. And Catherine is running around like barefoot, holding a knife. And she just like comes back and gets over one of them and just stabs them. And we see all of it. Like, this is where it becomes really a horror movie. Like the stabbing, they don't hold back. It's a lot of stabbing.
Okay.
And it's not fun. And you cut to Rose waking up. I guess it's the next day. I don't understand the time period now. Rose just wakes up in bed. Maybe she's taking a nap after shoveling all that snow. And she's looking in the mirror. She's thinking about the baby that's maybe in her belly. She goes to the bathroom and then she gets her period. And she's like, "Oh my God, thank God, thank God, thank God, I'm not pregnant." But her moment of relief ends really quickly because she hears the door open. And she's terrified of Catherine at this point. Like, she's so scared of her. She hears the door open.
Did she see the nuns die?
I was going to say, would she witness that?
No, she didn't witness any of that. No. Okay, okay. She's just like, she's just seen Catherine act like Catherine's fucking like crazy.
Weird. Yeah,
like
okay.
When she said, like, "Get your hands off me, cunt," it was like, what the fuck? Like, it was really unusual behavior.
She's so unpredictable. She's just acting. And that's scary. Sure,
okay. That is scary.
It's a little scary. So she's like, "Catherine?" And then she hears the door open and close again. And the doors are terrible in this movie. The doors are squeaking.
Yeah, loud, squeaky.
Everything's silent. Squeaking, squeaking. Then she goes out of the bathroom. Cue a long walk, long walk down a dark hallway. Opening and closing, a lot of squeaky ass doors. She gets to like the front doorway and she opens it. She looks down. She sees something covered in blood at the bottom of the staircase below her. And she's shocked. I don't know. Again, I don't know exactly what this is. Honestly, I have some guesses, but she turns around. She's scared. She shuts the door. She starts like running back to her room. And just as she's like starts going back up the hallway, Catherine turns the corner with a knife and just stabs the shit out of her. Just stabs her over and over and over again. Again, no holding back. We see everything. And she dies pretty slowly.
So this reminds me of, have you seen that episode of Extras where Patrick Stewart like writes the script of of having a superpower where you can make someone naked. I can't, something like,
no, no, I haven't seen like such
a, it's such a random thing to bring up, but basically Patrick Stewart is explaining to Ricky Gervais how his script is like, your superpower is that you can like nod your head or something and it'll make the woman you're talking to be naked. And he's very clear that each time it happens, he's like, and you see everything.
That's what I'm reminded of. That's what I'm mimicking right now, is that that episode. Exactly.
That's so funny.
God, okay, but funny. All right, here's the grossest part, though. All right, you're not even, just buckle up. So she stabs her. She dies very slowly. You see, like, the life go out of her. And honestly, part of me was like, is she faking it? Like, no, no, she's dead. She's dead. And you know for sure, because then Kieran and Shipka like straddles her and just like grabs her hair. She's on her stomach. She grabs her hair and just slowly lifts her head up and then takes her, like grabs her knife.
Oh no.
And then you cut away. And man, that was really gross. I did not like it. It was very, very gruesome, but in the big scheme of things, like, it's fine. You know, you can do it. You can do it.
The grand scheme of things, it's fine. So the implication is that she was about to saw her head off, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the police are searching the premises. One of them goes down into the basement, goes down into the boiler room. They see Catherine. She's kneeling in the boiler room, and there are three heads next to her.
Oh, boy.
Decapitated heads. And
the cunts.
The policeman is this. Yeah, cunts. He's just this, like, young guy who's fucking scared as hell.
Yeah.
And he's freaking out. And it keeps being like, drop the knife, because she's holding a knife. He's like, drop the knife, drop the knife, drop the knife. Ooh. And she, you can see her hearing him, and to her, his voice is all distorted and fucked up and kind of sounds like the voice she was hearing on the phone. Mm. And she puts her hands above her head. She doesn't drop the knife. She puts her hands above the head and she screams, "Hail Satan." And nice. Just starts like screaming. And at that moment, he shoots her in the shoulder. And it's the same shot from Emma Roberts in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're back in the car.
Do you think they ever would have seen a picture of the person who killed their daughter?
That's probably. This is the central issue with this film, is that, yes, they look alike, but like Kieran and Shipka and Emma Roberts, like, don't look that alike. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I know why they have to do it, because otherwise there's no twist, but it's kind of like the twist is a little bit diminished, because it's like 9 years later, you don't look like a completely different person, you know? Yeah. Anyway, so yes, okay. Well, Emma Roberts is Catherine.
Yep.
And now we're back in the car and Bill and his wife are driving. It's like the most fun road trip you've ever been on. And the wife is saying, you don't tell people she was murdered, do you? You don't tell people that they had to do a blood test to make sure that her head matched her body. And then Emma Roberts is like, I'm going to be sick. Pull over the car. Like, I'm going to be sick. And the wife clearly doesn't want to pull over because it's right at the school and she doesn't want to go there. And, but, you know, she keeps saying she's going to throw up. So Bill pulls over. Second he pulls over, she just stabs the shit out of them. She just kills them both. She cuts his throat and she stabs the wife a bunch. And then she just throws up everywhere in the car.
Oh my God.
She loves to
and
do
then
that.
She and then she cuts their heads off.
Oh, really?
Has she
been, oh, okay.
Do we think she's like been possessed this whole time?
Well, let's talk about that at the end.
Okay.
Oh, we're not at the end yet. Okay.
We're almost at the end. So then she puts the heads in the suitcase. And at this point in my notes, I just write, what the hell is this movie? Like, what's happening? Uh-huh. And she's covered in blood. And there's a long extended shot of her, like, cleaning the blood off of her with a napkin. And then she puts some makeup on. Just one napkin. God, a napkin can do a lot. You know how you always have those stray napkins in your car? Like, that's what you need them for, is when you are covered in blood for this reason. So then we get a shot of Kiernan Shipka back 9 years ago. She's been, you know, restrained. She's in the hospital. Father Brian comes to see her. This is the shot we also saw of him, like, hovering over her from earlier. And he's like, Catherine? And her face is so muted. And then she kind of looks at him and he goes, there you are. And he says, you're not wanted here. You will go from here. And he starts doing like an exorcism on her, essentially. So we're cutting between the exorcism that's happening and then Emma Roberts breaking into Bramford, which is now abandoned. Clearly this murder rampage that happened, people didn't want to go back to school there. So it's all shut down. Everything's boarded up, but she breaks in and we're kind of between this and the exorcism. Father Brian is lining up all of his cute little exorcism accessories. I mean, this would be like a fun ASMR to do, you know, opening up your holy water,
spritzing it,
putting your little, your little rosary beads on the table.
There's so much going on. And he's, you know, throwing the holy water on her and saying all this shit. She's like rising out of the hospital bed, out of her restraints. And she sees a figure in the distance. Kiernan Shipka sees something. You see her see something. And she like starts kind of crying. And she says, please don't go. Don't go. And you see an image of in the distance of this like furry dark creature with some long ass horns.
Ooh.
And then it's gone. And then it cuts back to Emma in the boiler room. She's her hands are covered in blood. She's the boiler room is there's obviously no fire in it. She's trying to light it. It won't light. She has the heads with her. They're next to her. It won't light. It won't light. Like she's like trying to make it work. It's not working. And then she walks back out onto the street. You just see her walk back out to where the car is and she just starts hysterically crying, like the most anguished cries you've ever heard, into her hands, like she's like covering her face with blood that was left on her hands, just screaming and roll credits. And then that's the end.
Wow.
Okay. So she wanted her little goat friend back.
I think so.
Yep.
And yeah. So she cut those heads so she could get her goat friend back.
Mm-hmm. I think that's it. I think she like missed her goat friend, but also
missed
like
being possessed.
But she's still kind of possessed because that's a pretty insane thing to do. And also like, when did she get possessed? I don't know.
Interesting.
But do you guys feel like uplifted and happy now?
I mean, it sounds good. I liked it.
I liked it too. And all three of them look very similar. Not the same, not enough to be the same person.
You know who does look, I feel like, enough the same is McKenna Grace and Kiernan Shipka. Ooh. I feel like that works to me as being the same person.
Okay, wait, that reminds me, Sammy, remember how you were worried that McKenna Grace is overworked?
Yeah, but she is. She definitely is.
Okay. So she did a TikTok recently of her in the hospital saying, basically being like, don't ask. Like, you don't.
She's like hospitalized from exhaustion.
I think so. Well, this
also
happened like a
few
weeks
ago. Pretty crazy to do a TikTok and then be like, don't ask.
Yeah. No, I mean.
I'm here. Don't ask me about it.
I mean, I don't remember exactly what it was, but that was the gist. I thought of you. I should have sent it to you. What was I thinking?
What were you thinking?
Being a bad friend. And I don't know whether she's addressed it since then. I feel like it was like a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I'm worried about her. I hope that she recovers quickly and decides to only, I don't know. She's 16, man.
That's so young.
And she's been in so many things. It's just crazy to that children work. It's just not right.
It's absolutely not right.
She's been in 70 things.
That's fucking nuts.
And she's also like has a music career as well. She's recording.
That's right.
Recording an album. It's just not right.
Ugh,
she needs rest.
Jesus.
And she needs to hang out with her friends.
She needs rest. The girl, I hope she gets it. I'm glad she wasn't in this movie because she needs a break.
Thank God. One movie she wasn't in. Just one.
Wow, Henley, that was a scary one that you watched.
Did you feel scared afterwards going to bed?
No, not at all. This didn't really scare me.
Okay.
It wasn't scary to me.
You're not scared of demons or the devil or...
No, I'm not. Ghosts. I'm really not. I think what would have been a lot scarier would have seen Catherine change. Like if she had been like more of like a normal girl and then something happened and she changed, that would have been really scary to me. But instead she's just kind of like casually maybe possessed the whole time. Mm-hmm. Like you don't see any difference.
Yeah.
The thing that always scares me is like the most is when the expectations are so different than what ends up happening. Like when things are ruined. Mm-hmm. That's the worst.
Yeah.
And when
I hate when things are ruined.
I do. I hate conflict. But because she was kind of the same character the whole time.
Yeah.
And it's called Black Coat's Daughter, which was confusing because part of me the whole time was like, oh, is the devil her dad? Like, but also Black Coat technically doesn't even mean, I was looking this up.
Yeah, what
and
does it mean?
It's just, wait, hold on. Oops.
Black coat. What does it mean?
It just means a clergyman.
Hmm. Well, I don't know then. I don't know what to do with that.
I don't know. It's not, it doesn't like mean devil or anything. I looked it up and everything I looked up was just about this movie when I tried to look up Black Coat and Devil. So... It's pretty, I mean, the movie itself is good, and I did honestly, like, enjoy watching it. It's very atmospheric. It's very moody.
Yeah.
If you want, like, just, like, a February dark winter sad movie, and it's, you know, an hour and a half quick.
Great.
I think the main flaw is just that there's... such little character development or such little like emotional weight behind any of the characters besides maybe a little bit Lucy Boynton, a little bit, but you just don't know anything about.
Yeah, that is something that I like from right from the beginning when you're just thrown into people's lives with no backstory. And
yeah, the whole movie is like this event,
a little present story. It does,
or
make
even like anything for them to react to besides just like a couple of events. Like
right.
If you just had a few more things happen to the person so you could see a little bit more of their personality or a little bit more of who they are. Like,
yeah,
even if it's small, like a small conversation.
But I do
it
like
goes
a,
so far.
I do like an atmospheric film. I feel like Watcher was kind of like that, where it's just a really simple premise that's basically just all atmosphere and like good acting, and sounds like this one had less good acting but still some.
I think the acting's perfectly fine for what it is. I mean, I would love for you to watch it and tell me what you think. Definitely doesn't shed boarding school in the most positive light.
Yeah, you went to boarding school, right, Henley?
Yeah, I did. And it was
nothing
a
like
very
this?
Positive experience. What if I was like, it was just like this, but I loved it. So I don't know what
they
were
really
thinking.
Nailed it.
No, it was nothing like this. But I think I maybe had an unusual experience at boarding school where it was actually very positive. Most people, I feel like, have negative experiences. But it's really normal to do that on the East Coast. Also, people who are from not the East Coast are like, you went to boarding school? What the hell? Like, did you like drop out or get kicked
thing.
Out? But no, it was pretty normal where I grew up anyway. So that's this movie. Thanks for listening. I just like love you guys and just don't
just
get
love you.
If you get possessed by the devil, just like give me a heads up, you know?
Well, just don't be a cunt.
I won't be a cunt to you. You won't be a cunt to me.
And then we'll all
head.
Be fine.
I'll be fine.
It's that simple, really.
There's essentially no voices in this besides the distorted devil voice on the other side of
them.
Oh, yeah, I'm pretty sure it ends with that, too. Deedle-deedle. But I'll do from all of us here at Too Scary Didn't Watch.
Goodbye. Bye.
Deedle deedle.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Too Scary Didn't Watch. If you enjoyed the episode, please remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you really want to make our day, you can rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. You can also follow us on social media at TSDW Podcast. We are on Instagram and Twitter. And if you want even more content, you can become a patron at patreon.com/TSDW Podcast. We will be back next week with a regular episode. We love you a lot. Bye.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.